The following exercises are for balancing your breathing. When properly done, these exercises will give you the experience of prana as a light, sparkling, flowing sensation in your body. Mentally, balanced breathing is reflected in a sense of calm, lack of tension, and quietness, as the static of restless thinking gives way to silence. So let's begin these exercises. Exercise 1. Body breathing. Sit still in a chair, listening to soft music, or outside listening to the wind in the treetops. As you listen, gently let your attention flow out of your ears as you easily exhale. Repeat for a minute, then do the same thing through your eyes, letting the attention go outward on the breath, slowly and gently. Repeat this through the nostrils, the mouth, then sit quietly, just listening to the music with your whole body. Now, the wind in the treetops. As you listen, gently let your attention flow out of your ears as you easily exhale. Repeat for a minute, then do the same thing through your eyes, letting the attention go outward on the breath, slowly and gently. Repeat this through the nostrils, the mouth, then sit quietly, just listening to the music with your whole body. Now, allow your attention to sink into your chest. Feel where your heart center is, at the point where the breastbone and ribs join, and breathe out through it, letting your attention go with the breath. Continue gently for another minute, then sit quietly, aware of your body. This exercise consciously links respiration and the nervous system, helping to promote their smooth integration. Feeling your awareness as it flows out on your breath gives you a powerful sense of being at harmony with the natural world. Exercise 2. The expanding light. Stand in your stocking feet with your eyes closed, arms down at your sides, and vividly relive the sensation of your last exhilarating experience. Recapture the feeling of being happy, vibrant, and carefree. As you do this, inhale slowly through your nose and begin to spread your arms out slowly. Imagine that as you inhale, your breath is expanding from the center of your chest. It is an expanding light that is making your arms float effortlessly open, and as the light expands, your happy, exhilarated feeling expands with it. Let the light grow, spreading from the center of your heart, reaching out to the tips of your fingers, up to your head, and down to your toes. You'll also be smiling, so let that grow. At the point of maximum extension, start slowly exhaling through your nose and bring your arms back down to your sides. Do this slowly, taking longer to exhale than to inhale. Take the expanded feeling light back down into your chest until it is small and localized in your heart again. As your arms come back down to your sides, let your head drop forward. Now repeat the exercise on the next breath, expanding the feeling again. Don't pay attention to your physical movements, but stay with the feeling. You want to open and close it like a flower with each breath. You'll notice that this is an extremely pleasant exercise because as you open, your body fills with breaths, awareness and enjoyment all at once. The sensation is light, warm, tingling. As you close, the body relaxes and slumps under its own weight, becoming more grounded and still. You're exploring a complete range of feeling which allows the subtle breath to penetrate into every channel.
Friends would
As we get older, there's a natural tendency for prana to diminish. This must be countered to preserve youthfulness. India's ancient science of life, Ayurveda, is usually referred to as India's traditional medicine, but there is a deeper spiritual basis for Ayurveda. According to Ayurveda, the life energy or prana is channeled through our bodies by a wind known as vata. When prana vata, prana's channel throughout the body, is out of balance, there's general disruption throughout the system. As the wind of the body, vata is cold, drying, and piercing. The whole body begins to shrivel and dry up. The bowels become dry, tight, and constipated. Racked with insomnia and worry, the person languishes, prey to ever-increasing aches and pains. Old people rarely suffer from just one of the symptoms of vata imbalance, and many suffer them on a broad scale. If multiple drugs are prescribed for each symptom, new imbalances begin to pile up, for the body cannot help but react with imbalance to the common medications of the elderly. Whether we like it or not, a symptom is something the body wants to express. It is a message, and drugs suppress that expression. How fast you age is intimately linked to the speed and intensity of vata aggravation. What can cause vata imbalance? Ayurveda holds that any quality vata already possesses will be stimulated by the same quality outside. These qualities are dry, cold, changeable, rough, moving, light, subtle, and quick. Anything in your environment that contains these specific traits will increase vata. Dry weather, dry foods, cold weather, cold food and drink, motion, travel, sudden life changes, rough textured materials next to the skin, being made to rush, etc. Prana vata regulates the nervous system, so it shifts with the slightest thought or sensation. By doing the things that are needed to keep prana vata in balance, we have a complete system for conserving prana and defeating the aging process at an extremely subtle level. Vata can be kept in balance through various lifestyle measures, keeping regular habits for mealtimes, bedtime work schedule, warm, well-cooked food, sunshine, warm, heavy foods in cold weather, nurturing emotions, relaxation, avoidance of stressful situations, stable relationships and work, stable home life, and a quiet, orderly work environment. Special attention to balancing vata should be paid whether you are recuperating from illness, under emotional stress, suffering from jet lag, display depression, chronic fatigue and exhaustion, or have been physically wounded. All of these conditions cause severe vata disturbance. The final boundary that limits human life is death. And for thousands of years, humans have tried to travel beyond that boundary. Despite the obvious mortality of our bodies, moments arise when the clear perception of immortality shines through. Some people believe that they have contacted this timeless realm through near-death experiences, but it is also accessible in everyday life. Our first world is the world of action and activity, but there are moments when the second world makes itself known, full of peace and joy, and a clear, unforgettable sense of who we really are. If the second world is inside us, so is the first, because everything to be seen, felt, and touched in the world is knowable only as firings of neuronal signals inside our brains. It all happens in here. The first world contains sickness, aging, and death as inevitable parts of the scenery. In the second world, these are totally absent. Therefore, finding this world within ourselves and experiencing it, even for a moment, could have a profound effect upon the process of sickness and aging, if not death itself. The new paradigm assures us that there is a level of nature where time dissolves. This shows us that being, living in the eternal, is a very real state, existing beyond change and death, a place where the laws of nature are overturned. Death is ultimately just another transformation from one configuration of matter and energy to another. But unless you stand outside the arena of change, death represents an endpoint, an extinction. To escape death ultimately means escaping the worldview that gives death its terrible sense of closure and finality. When the spell of mortality is broken, you can release the fear that gives death its power. By seeing through the fear, you can turn it into a positive force. Let your fear of death motivate you to examine your true worth and to have a dream for your life, Dr. David Wiskott writes. Let it help you value the moment, act on it, and live in it. I want to go even further and suggest that when you see yourself in terms of timeless being, every cell awakens to a new existence. True immortality can be experienced here and now in this living body. One of Einstein's brilliant contributions to modern physics was his intuition that linear time, along with everything else happening in it, is superficial. He displaced linear time with something much more fluid, time that can contract and expand, slow down or speed up. He often compared this to subjective time, for he noted that spending a minute sitting on a hot stove seems like an hour, while spending an hour with a beautiful girl seems like a minute. What he meant by this is that time depends on the situation of the observer. We all have a sense that time expands and contracts, seeming to drag one moment and race the next. But what is our constant, our absolute? I believe it is me, our core sense of self. If you're bored, time hangs heavy. If you're desperate, time is running out. Time, in the subjective sense, is a mirror. All of us, however, feel the presence of a serious threatening deadline over which we have no control, death itself. How much better not to feel any time pressure, to blossom fully despite the fact that death exists. The attitude that life is a blossoming, not a race, can be achieved. But to do that, you can't believe that time is running out. Sending that message to the cells in your body is the same ultimately as programming them to age and die. Yet the fact is that linear time is moving inexorably forward, and to overcome that, we must find a place where a different kind of time, or no time, can be experienced and internalized. Throughout this tape, I've argued that how you age depends on how you metabolize your experience. And in the final analysis, how you metabolize time is the most important aspect of this process, because time is the most fundamental experience. It's possible to have actual experiences of your own timelessness, and when that happens, there's a shift from time-bound awareness to timeless awareness. Time-bound awareness is defined by the following: external goals, approval from others, material possessions, salary, success, deadlines and time pressures, self-image built up from past experiences, lessons learned from past hurts and failures, fear of change, fear of death, distracted by past and future, regrets, anticipations, longing for security, selfishness, the sense of what's in it for me. Timeless awareness, on the other hand, is defined by the following: internal goals, happiness, self-acceptance, creativity, freedom from time pressure, sense that time is abundant and open-ended, little thought of self-image, action focused on the present moment, reliance on intuition and imaginative leaps, detachment from change and turmoil, no fear of death, positive experience of being, selflessness, altruism, sense of shared humanity, sense of personal immortality. Although I have described them as opposites, there is in fact a whole range of experience running from completely time-bound awareness to completely timeless. We can all see some of ourselves in all of these traits. Most people have very little notion of how much effort they are expending to keep themselves inside time-bound awareness. In their natural state, both body and mind attempt to discharge negative energies as soon as they are felt. A baby cries when it is hungry and falls asleep when it is exhausted. Once a person reaches adulthood, however, spontaneous expression has largely been squelched in favor of behavior that is safe and acceptable. This loss of spontaneity is part of not living in the present, which we have already discussed. But one result we haven't discussed, the loss of timelessness. When the human organism is discharging its negative experiences efficiently, the mind is empty of past or future concerns. There is no worry, no anticipation or regret. This means that the time is left open to being, the simplest state of awareness. Unfortunately, normal life is far from being in the state. We are all time-bound, and only on the rarest occasions do we manage to break into a conscious experience of our true nature. The sense of freedom, of throwing away the old baggage, arises automatically once a person stops relating only to his limited self. In moments of deepest awareness, we completely transcend self-image. To experience this, you have to stop identifying with your self-image and its context of memories and linear time. Time-based experience isn't whole and never can be, because it is by definition made up of fragments. The sense of being one with things brings safety and absence of threat. If harboring threat inside us is what gives rise to aging, then we cannot afford to live with our present fear of death. In actuality, death is not the all-powerful force our fear tells us it is. In nature, death is part of the larger cycle of birth and renewal, a transformation into different configurations of energy. To break free of the fear of death, you need to see that it is based on a very selective view of reality, which was conditioned into you before you had a conscious choice, trained into you by well-meaning parents. It isn't death that is hurting us, but the dread of its inevitability. Aging reminds us of death. Therefore, it forces us to look into a gap that was opened in childhood when the first cherished thing in our lives died. You may think that death is an awful event waiting for you in the future, when in actuality, parts of your body are dying every second. Your stomach lining has to partially die every time you digest food, only to be replaced by new tissue. The same is true of your skin, hair, toenails, blood cells, and almost every other tissue. You may think that death is your enemy, but all these cells are dying to keep you alive. If your stomach lining didn't die and get replaced over and over, gastric juices would dissolve a hole in your stomach wall, and then all of you would die. The line between what is living and what is dead gets very blurry the closer you look. Muscles have a faster metabolism than fat. Brain, heart, and liver cells rarely, if ever, duplicate after birth, while stomach, skin, and blood cells replace themselves in a matter of days, weeks, and months. Some people recoil from all this talk about death. They don't fear death, they say. Yet, unconscious forces are at work in us. We may all concede that we are going to die, but except in moments when we have to be present with the dead or dying, our dread is kept under wraps. The fact that we all protect ourselves from dread doesn't mean that we have control over it. From within its dark pit, fear is still exerting control over us. The point is not that death is a fiction, but that our belief in death creates limitations where none need exist. One assumption people often make is that death is somehow unnatural and by implication evil. I cannot agree. Nature is very tolerant and flexible about how dying is used or not used, and questions of good and evil tend to look rather arbitrary. DNA long ago discovered the secret of creating ageless cells. The hydra, for example, is a primitive water animal that can grow new cells as fast as old cells are shed. The hydra is always growing at one end and dying at the other, renewing its entire body every 2 weeks. This is creation and destruction in perfect balance, leaving no room for death. The secret of eternal youth, then, is a balanced metabolism, a constant chemical flow that processes food and air and water in perfect equilibrium without losing a stitch to entropy. Even among higher organisms, DNA exerts considerable control over death. The common honeybee, for example, can change its age at will. Every bee is a worker in its youth, then grows up in a few weeks to become a mature forager. Should the hive lack workers, some foragers will reverse their ages and become young again. They regenerate the hormones of youthful workers and even regrow the special glands needed to produce food for the hatching larva. With only slight changes, one could use this model for the human body. It is a mammoth hive of 50 trillion cells, which grow old or stay young, according to what is needed by the whole colony at a given moment. Dying is a form of change, and as such, it has to be seen within the larger framework of non-change. How, then, can we learn to live within this continuity that is the wholeness of life? What about a parent's emotional devastation when a child dies, or a wife's when she loses her husband? These feelings are natural, of course, but the pain does not have to be enduring if you have absorbed the reality of life as an eternal flow in which there is no loss or gain, only transformation. In one of his sonnets, Shakespeare wrote, "I weep to have what I fear to lose." This is the inevitable result of attachment to time-bound awareness. The new paradigm holds that awareness is the source of reality, and two wholly different kinds of reality result from time-bound and timeless awareness. All of us experience aspects of both timeless and time-bound realities because our awareness is fluid. This flexibility is the true genius of human awareness because it leaves all possibilities open. Yet, obviously, there are great advantages to being able to live permanently in timeless awareness. Humans are not trapped in time, squeezed into the volume of a body and the span of a lifetime. We are voyagers on the infinite river of life. Immortality dawns when you realize that you deserve your place in the eternal flow. Nature waits to lavish this supreme gift upon you. Having nourished us for millions of years, the sea, the air, and the sun are still singing the song we must begin to appreciate once more. As long as creation dominates your existence, you will keep growing and evolving. Evolution thwarts entropy, decay, and aging. The most creative people in any field intuitively draw upon this understanding. Whatever their field, certain traits are generally shared by them. These are: they are able to contact and enjoy silence. They connect with and enjoy nature. They trust their feelings. They can remain centered and function in the midst of confusion and chaos. They are childlike. They enjoy fantasy and play. They are self-referring. They place the highest trust in their own consciousness. They are not rigidly attached to any point of view. Although passionately committed to their creativity, they remain open to new possibilities. These points give us a practical standard to measure how creatively our own lives are proceeding. The following exercise demonstrates how to develop and strengthen these different areas. Sit down and make an action plan for the next 6 months based upon the qualities of very creative people which we just discussed. You don't have to squeeze every point in each day. Just make a commitment to allow these aspects of your life to emerge more fully. Experiencing silence. First, block out some time to experience silence. Ideally, this would mean a short period of meditation, 15 to 30 minutes in the morning before you go to work, then a second period just after you get home in the evening. This is a time simply to be, and yet its very simplicity can make it the most important time of your life. Silence is a precious commodity particularly in the hustle-bustle of modern society. Silence is the great teacher, and to learn its lessons, you must pay attention to it. Spending time in nature. Plan to spend a period of time contacting nature. There is nothing healthier than discharging pent-up energies, which happens spontaneously when you remove yourself from the artificial confines of the man-made world and return to nature. If you can find a patch of ground to lie on, shoes off, and arms outstretched to the sun, take advantage of it. Short of that, seek out the experiences of nature where you live, stopping for a few moments in the evening to watch the sunset and gaze at the moon and stars, or tending a windowsill garden. However you manage it, you want to capture at least a few moments of freshness and feel the nourishing touch of earth, sun, and sky. Experiencing and trusting emotions. Begin a journal of your feelings. Simply make a list of some key emotions and note one example of each as it arises in your day. Start with key words for the basic positive emotions. These are love, sympathy, happiness, trust, joy, acceptance, friendliness, compassion. Then make a column for more abstract feelings associated with creativity and personal growth, such as insight, discovery, faith, forgiveness, revelation, intuition, transcendence, merging, peace. Last of all, note the primary negative emotions. These are anger, anxiety, guilt, distrust, envy, sorrow, greediness, selfishness. Look at this sheet of paper in the morning and take it to work with you as a reminder. Writing down your feelings in some detail will give you the most benefit. However, you can do it silently. Run down the list and simply remember each emotion briefly. Your goals with this journal are to discover how often you feel things that get overlooked, to permit the spontaneous release of emotions that you would normally repress or try to forget, to truly know your emotions. This is the first stage of mastering emotions. And finally, to make emotions enjoyable. The life of feelings is meant to be rich and satisfying, but if your emotions are strangers to you, there is a gap that prevents enjoyment. It's important not to focus too much on negative emotions, which are the easiest for everyone to experience, and usually the most self-serving. The reason we are bringing up negative emotions is to gain insight into their origin. Being genuinely in touch with emotions tends to be tremendously difficult in the midst of work and other busy activities. Yet nothing is more important. You are the totality of all the relationships you have, and the most accurate mirror of them is your emotions. Remaining centered in the midst of chaos. In order to remain centered and calm when everything around you is in confusion, you need to develop skills for finding your center. To do that, isolate 2 times in your workday when things are most hectic and stressful for you. Now plan to take 5 minutes to center yourself just before these 2 periods using the following technique. Find a place where you can be alone, one that is as quiet as possible. Sit comfortably and close your eyes. Pay attention to your breath. See the air as faint swirls coming into your nostrils and gently out again. After 2 minutes, begin to feel your body in detail. After 1 minute, gently bring your focus of attention to the center of your chest and lightly rest it there. Within a few seconds, your attention will probably be distracted. Don't resist this, but when you notice what is happening, gently return your focus of attention back to your center. End the exercise by sitting quietly, doing nothing. Although this is a very simple technique, the discharge of negative energies it produces is often quite dramatic. You will see that being centered is actually the most natural and comfortable way to be under any circumstance, no matter how hectic. Being childlike. Write down 2 or 3 things you can do tomorrow that are totally childlike. Eating an ice cream cone, being on the playground, playing games with clouds. Begin to incorporate these activities more and more into your present life. Your goal is to find that place inside yourself where you're still a carefree child. Your childhood is still here with you, ready to be evoked and integrated into your whole being. What usually happens over time is that we lose track of the joy inside us. Ultimately, the desire to be young again is a symbol of the deeper desire to remain new. Babies and young children have no problem with this. By putting yourself back into the most childlike mindset you can imagine, you open the way for learning that there is value in just being ourselves. Self-referral. The highest state of consciousness available to us is unity, which erases the distinction between observer and observed. To do this and re-experience yourself as a free, uncluttered person, you have to work at stripping away the crusted varnish of self-image. Your action plan can take many different directions in accomplishing this goal. Take up a new activity that is totally different from your self-image. Take up aerobic dancing if you are a gray flannel business executive, or weightlifting if you are a housewife. Expose yourself to people and situations that stretch you and prompt you to grow beyond old habits. Write your autobiography. Putting down every detail of your life as candidly and honestly as possible will help you detach yourself from ingrained attitudes by showing you where they came from. Resolve to take one step every day in correcting some behavior that you know isn't an expression of the real you. If you are a people pleaser, for example, say what you really feel instead of echoing what people want to hear. If you're always outspoken, stop yourself and listen to others for a change. These simple exercises can actually be quite challenging. You need to learn to lower your social facade, and the more you practice, the less critical it will be to wear the mask. Practicing non-attachment. Being unattached means that you're free from outside influences that overshadow your real self. This lesson isn't something our culture teaches. Most people place a high value on being committed, excited, passionate, deeply involved, and so forth, failing to realize that these qualities are not the opposite of non-attachment. To be committed to a relationship, for example, ultimately means having the love and understanding to let the other person be who they want to be. The paradox is that to get the most passion from life, you must be able to stand back and be yourself. Finding your own freedom is necessary, and it involves letting go of expectations, preconceived outcomes, and the egoistic point of view. Speaking for myself, I found that entry into moments of non-attachment are characterized by the following aspects. I am present with my body. My breathing becomes very refined, approaching stillness. Mental activity has calmed down. I feel no threat. There is a certainty of belonging. I perceive my inner world as an open space with no boundaries. Self-acceptance flows out into the environment. Things out there seem intimate to me, an extension of myself. This experience of unity is also my working definition of love. In terms of your action plan, you need to find an outlet for your love, a place where you can give it freely. Love wants to find itself, and when the circuit is complete, bliss flows. Ask yourself the question, where do I find bliss? And then write down the steps you can take to increase this area of your life. Don't confuse pleasure with love. There are things that give pleasure, such as watching television, with very little love in them. Love brings pleasure in a more profound way, with compassion and understanding. When you make your list, many of your most cherished moments of bliss will have gone forever. You cannot duplicate the first new feeling of falling in love with the person you are now married to, for example. But you will remember how you felt the day your children were born, and in that reminder is a clue. Your children can still be a source of bliss if you resolve to make contact and reach deeper into your relationship. Nothing is more important than reconnecting with your bliss. Nothing is as rich. Nothing is more real. Exercise 2. Being love versus being in love. I'd like to explore the state of love further because it is the royal road back to being. the ancient sages declared that ultimately everything is made of consciousness, and when we experience consciousness purely, it is only love. The merging of love, truth, and reality is the greatest revelation of unity consciousness, the moment a person can truthfully say, I am the all, and I am love in the same breath. Being in love is not the same state as this. When you fall in love, an opening is created for repressed feelings to rush forth and attach themselves to another person. If the love is deep enough, the other person starts to seem ideal and perfect. This has nothing to do with their actual state, which could be quite imperfect and even miserable, but the force of love changes reality by changing the perceiver. Certain markers in the immune system rise when the feelings of love are present, as studies have shown. The positive effect on the immune system remained highest among those subjects who reported a strong sense of being loved in their own lives and of having strong ties to family and friends. This implied that some people are already in a state conducive to love. Instead of experiencing love as a passing state, they had incorporated it as a trait. In other words, the statement of the enlightened sage, I am love, was present in these people. The researchers concluded that love is a state transcending reason whose purpose is simply to allow the experience of a larger shared reality. This represents a step into the realm of timeless love. When two people use their love for one another as a doorway into this realm, the death of the loved one does not close the door or deprive the other of the flow of love. Ultimately, all love comes from within, and the power of love to nurture and sustain us depends on our commitment to it. It is important to talk about love, to think about it, to seek it out and encourage it, to put it in the form of an exercise, make a commitment to yourself to do the following. Think about love. Take time to recall the love you shared with your family members. Dwell upon what is most lovable about the person who is most loving in your life today. Read deeply in the poetry of love, such as Shakespeare's sonnets. Talk about love. Express your feelings directly to someone you love. If you cannot do it verbally, write a letter or a poem. You don't have to send it. The exercise is for you, to stimulate the state of love in every cell. But sending it is the best thing, for you want to hear expressions of love in return. Don't let your love just be something taken for granted. Seek out love. This is possible in many ways. It is an act of love to give help to the homeless and the sick, to deliver a sincere compliment or write a note of thanks and praise. People like to hear that they are loved and appreciated, and you will have the bliss of being loved in return. And encourage love. As parents, we often teach our children that being openly affectionate and loving is appropriate for babies and toddlers, but not later on. The story of almost everyone is a story of love waiting to be coaxed out, of affection that has to wait in silence because it is afraid to emerge. So take it as your duty to give those around you permission to love. Encourage their affection by showing it yourself, without regard for what you get in return. Real love gains complete satisfaction by simply flowing out to what is loved. If love comes back, that is an added joy, but it isn't required or demanded. The education of love begins in a moment and ends in eternity. It is sparked by feelings of delight and resolves into the peace that belongs to being itself. Use your love as a mirror to the timeless. Let it nurture your certainty that you are beyond change, beyond the memory of yesterday and the dream of tomorrow. There are infinite ways to discover your true being, but love holds the brightest torch. If you follow it, you will be guided beyond the limits of age and beyond the limits of death. Come out of the circle of time and find yourself in the circle of love.
Oh, This has been a Random House Audiobooks presentation.